So my name is Stephen Downs, and I'm talking to you from Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. And the topic of this presentation is communities and networks. And the reason why I've chosen to focus on this topic, although the conference is about personal learning environments as a whole, is because what I am attempting to do with this discussion is to get some kind of a handle on the properties and the functions of the personal learning environment. And we get to the properties and functions of the personal learning environment by understanding what sort of function it is supposed to fulfill. So I'm going to begin with the concept of the origins of the idea of the community of practice, and then from the origins, from the original concept, I'm going to talk about how technology has changed that concept, and then talk about communities and networks as they are existing today. So I think most of us are familiar with the concept of communities of practice through the works of Etienne Wenger and his groundbreaking work on the subject. The idea of communities of practice, though, as he points out, are not new to us. The community of practice is something that has been with us, you know, through prehistory. They're, as he says, an integral part of our daily lives. They're so informal and so pervasive that we rarely even think about them, he says. But while the term communities of practice may be new, the actual experience of communities of practice is not new. The idea of a community of practice is, he writes, to facilitate collaboration, to allow a group of people to work together to do things like answer specific questions via subject matter experts, to filter out incorrect information, to capture institutional knowledge and to reuse it, to share successful best practices, basically to perform all the management functions that you might find typical in a group or in a community. There must be some way of getting rid of this bottom window here. Chris, can you tell me how to get rid of just this stuff here so I can show the entire slides? Thank you. Sorry, I'm having difficulty translating the Catalan on the it's because the salient features translated to principal characteristic. Principle is a bit different in meaning than upper right. No, that closes it. One more. No. Here? No. Ah, thank you. There we go. That's much better. So, because I want people to be able to read the entire slide as I present this. Anyhow, the salient or principal characteristics of a community of practice, a shared domain of interest. The idea here is that what brings a community of practice together is not an organizational boundary, it's not an operational boundary or even a task boundary, but rather the community of practice is defined in a sense semantically. It is defined by the knowledge that is held and valued by the members of the community rather than a particular organization or the particular function. And so the community of practice will focus on value, mutual exchange, and learning around that body of knowledge. Within organizations, communities of practice are very informal. And while members are motivated by their enterprise, motivated by the work that they are doing, the communities of practice are responsible only to themselves and not to the organization. So the community of practice exists underneath the organization. Organization is here, communities of practice exist underneath it and not responsible to it. So the community of practice is not owned, and the community of practice is not managed, and indeed the attempt to manage a community of practice arguably will kill the community of practice. Wenger says, you cannot create a community of practice. You can't build a community of practice. It's like attempting to force a plant to grow by pulling its leaves, and all you'll do, of course, is uproot the plant. All you can do, he says, is create the infrastructure in which it will prosper. The community of practice is characterized by three major dimensions. First of all, what it is about. Again, we have the emphasis on it being a joint enterprise, understood and continuously renegotiated by its members. We have the function of the community of practice, where there is, again, a joining, a mutual engagement that binds people together into a single social entity. And then the capacity or capability that it produces, which again, we see the joining again, the shared repertoire of communal resources. All of this again is still Etienne Wenger. We see a community of practice typically going through various stages of development, from the beginning stage through the coalescing stage, where it is the members are coming together and beginning to recognize the potential of the community of practice, through an active functioning stage, and then after that, where the members become dispersed and it just becomes something that we talk about in the past. And this is a life cycle of communities that we have seen frequently in communities online. The community in a practice, in a business, is distinct from a business unit, is distinct from a functional unit. It defines itself through its own practice. It's different from a team, and it's different from a network. The idea here is that the community of practice is represented by the joining that takes place around the concept or the idea, rather than through any functional characteristics of the organization. The functions of a community of practice include exchange and interpretation of information, the idea of retaining information and retaining knowledge in living ways, that is, through the shared practice of the members of the community of practice, to steward competencies, that is to say, to grow and refine the profession, and to keep, if you will, a professional home for members' identities. People identify as members of the community of practice just as much as they might identify themselves as people who work for a company. Now, that's the concept of the community of practice that was originally conceived by Etienne Wenger. And that's the concept of the community of practice that we were working with in the earlier days of the internet, when we were thinking about how to facilitate online learning and how to facilitate learning in communities. And so through the late 1990s, early 2000s, we went through this period of stasis where we understood the idea of a community in that way, and then began to work with communities along that sort of model. A major example of that sort of status was represented in the book by Hegel and Armstrong called Net.Gain. And they've translated it here to Net.Advantages. The actual title is, well, maybe there's a translation of the book, but the book is named Net.Gain. And the idea here, according to Hegel and Armstrong, was that these online communities, very much like communities of practice, would have a distinctive focus around a particular type of content and would have the capability of integrating that content and aggregating member-generated content. So it would provide people who were interested in a subject area with access to content and knowledge and information produced by different sources and produced by different publishers. The idea of the community as defined by Hegel and Armstrong was that there would be commercial benefits to these communities. They would reduce search cost. They would increase, therefore, the propensity of their customers or their members to buy products being advertised within that community. It would make it easier for customers to target vendors and for vendors to target customers. It would allow what was called disintermediation, the removal of the broker or the middle person between the vendor or the seller of a product and the purchaser of a product. So, for example, in a travel community of practice, people could buy services related to travel directly from those people who were selling them, as opposed to some intermediary like the travel agent. Part of my own work in the late 1990s and early 2000s was the development of such a community. This is the front page of a community called MuniMall. MuniMall was intended to be a community of practice based around municipal government in Alberta, which is a province in Canada. And so the members of this community of practice were intended to be elected officials and town managers throughout the province. And this community was in fact successful. And although it was created in 1999, it still exists to this day and is still populated by its members. The purpose or the objective of MuniMall, don't do that. All right, and I'm going to go to the full version of me. Hi, everybody. And so, okay, so I'm not going to be able to refer to the Catalan version of the slides. But I will refer to the title of the slide when I'm on a given slide and tell you when I'm changing the slides. So the objective of MuniMall was to attempt to enable people to move their non-virtual communications, things like telephone calls and written messages and things like that, onto the internet, and then to enhance or to support these communications through repositories of information, resources, and educational materials and the like, and also by creating opportunities for discussion through online bulletin boards and exchange. And the idea here is that the community of practice that already existed in the municipal environment would be transferred to an internet environment and thereby enhanced. I'm moving to the next slide now. Issues, MuniMall issues. Now, what we discovered with MuniMall is that the very transparency of the discourse, the very fact that everybody was in this shared environment, created issues. We found that the fact that the community of practice existed outside existing social and management structures disrupted established relationships, disrupted existing power relationships and authority relationships. For example, with Munimal, in Alberta, there were various organizations of municipal officials and municipal governments. There was one for the urban municipalities and one for the rural municipalities. And these organizations were opposed to Munimal because it was transferring much of the function that they originally performed over to this online environment. And then another issue we had with Munimal was simply the willingness to use the resource, whether people wanted to conduct their community of practice in this online shared environment. So we learned quite a bit from the issues that arose as a result of Munimal. Next slide, which is titled Pegasus. This was another community that I worked on, and again, this was set up in the early 2000s. Pegasus was a community of engineers, geologists, and geophysicists, and it was intended to provide an environment where people could subscribe to online learning resources and access learning opportunities. And what we found with Pegasus was that while the members of the organization were very willing to use the site, the providers of the learning resources weren't nearly as willing to provide resources to the site. The idea of Pegasus was that these providers would make their would list their resources using RSS and other formats, and Pegasus would aggregate these lists and present them in a common environment. And that would have worked, but the people providing the resources did not want to present them in this common environment. So they did not want to give up their independence and their autonomy to manage their own resource offerings in their own way. Next slide, looking for the next level. What we needed to do with these early attempts at online community of practice was to move from a very simple, very basic kind of organization to something that was sustainable, something that the members themselves, both the consumers and the providers, would drive, something that was self-organizing and self-managing. Because what we found is that, you know, you can lead people to the internet, but you can't make them drink. The people, once they are on the internet, they are able to interact and participate in their own way. And you can't push them into restricted silos, and you can't push them into organized and managed environments. Next slide, please. This is the title slide, C, Evolution. And so now what I want to talk about is the way things have begun to evolve with the greater use of internet technologies to support communities of practice. And the first slide here, then the next slide, Clue Train. What we are realizing in the online environment is that markets, and not just markets, but enterprises, environments, learning, and all of the rest, are not organizations, they're not structures, rather they are conversations, and they have the dynamics that are implied by conversations. They have the dynamics of a peer-to-peer sort of status. They have the dynamics of everybody contributes, everybody receives. They have the dynamics of being composed of individual links from person to person to person. This is a very different model of a community than the model where everybody becomes part of one thing. Next slide, please. Power of the individual. What we are seeing online, because it is very difficult, if not impossible, to coerce a person online, is that the individual is beginning to have more power. So we see the evolution of the power of the individual. And it's important, it's the individual whose desires become more important, and not the creation of some sort of desire by the creation of a website or the creation of some sort of message or massage of the media. The World Wide Web and the Internet generally allows for a new individualism in both the acquisition and the choice and the propagation of knowledge. Now, I want to be careful because this position is very often misinterpreted at this point. By a new individualism, by a new autonomy, I do not mean working alone. I do not mean working without the community. I do not mean some kind of Ayn Rand individualism, forget everybody else sort of thing. What I am saying is that there has been a shift in the balance of power from the organization to both organization and people, so that the needs and interests of the individual have been elevated, but this does not eliminate the rest of society, the rest of the network. Next slide, please. We have seen this sort of emphasis on the individual before, in telephone, in email, in blogs. If you look at each of these three technologies, the control and the technology itself is in the hands of the individual. The creative capacity, the innovation, the values, the desires, the purposes lies at the edges. The telephone network does not tell us how to use the telephone network. The telephone network is completely indifferent as to the content that is exchanged from one caller to another. The same is true of email, the same is true of blogs. The network, it becomes not some kind of environment, but rather some way of facilitating communication between the members. Next slide, please. Nomic world. What happens now is that the form or the mode of governance changes. Governance traditionally had an element of coercion, an element of force, even if the force was simply things like the group would walk out on you or something like that. Online, there is no direct form of governance. The only way of creating any sort of governance is through some sort of social norm. The idea is that you either engage or don't engage with the majority. You either use HTML or you don't use HTML. There's no law, but if the rest of the people use HTML, then if you use HTML, you can communicate with them. If you choose not to use HTML, then maybe you communicate with them, maybe not. Who knows? The idea here is that the mechanics, the stuff that just happens, is what underlies this community, and we can all choose whether or not to use these mechanics. There's no sense in which we can require somebody to make these choices or not. Next slide, please. There remain issues in this sort of governance online. There remain difficulties in understanding and grasping how this kind of online governance can occur. For example, In the area of computer code, it's difficult to share the power of computer code among the users. It's difficult to put up a program on a website and then allow everybody to start modifying that program, because very quickly the program will cease running. Secondarily, there's a big issue of economics. If you put a website online and invite people to that website, then the box that hosts that website is owned by someone who is distinct from the users. So what I'm trying to draw out here is a contrast between the dynamics of online community as we see it expressed in communities of practice and the actualities of power as it is distributed in an online environment. And the thing is, if you set up these communities of practice as boxes, as destination websites, then it becomes difficult for people to exercise the individuality, the creative capacity that they want to create. That was a very bad sentence, I'm sorry. The creative capacity, it becomes difficult for people to express a creative capacity. So you have, on the one hand, a place where the model is based on some kind of control, a structure, a site that is owned by you, and on the other hand, it's located in an environment where that kind of control is impossible. So I'm not being as clear as I would like here, but there's a tension or a conflict between those two objectives. Next slide, please. So what we are evolving toward, what we are moving toward, is the idea of what might be called dynamic communities of practice. And this is a model or a definition of a community of practice which is not static, which is not defined as a box, which is not defined as a single website like MuniMall or Pegasus or even Facebook or MySpace or any of these existing communities of practice. The management, the information, the control is not all brought to the center. Rather, it is distributed out to the edges. The information and the control is in the hands of the individual users and their individual software. Some people have been talking recently about the web itself as this community of practice. And that's a good model, because if we look at the web itself, the information and the control is at the edges. It's not in the infrastructure of the web. It's in individual websites, individual browsers. These kind of dynamic communities of practice are based not so much on centralized content and centralized knowledge management. They're not based so much on shared resources, but rather on the conversations and the communications that take place between the members. They're not based on a single shared vocabulary, single shared understanding of the way of the world, but rather an increasingly complex vocabulary, an increasingly complex set of technologies that people use to create, to communicate with each other. And these communities of practice are not created, they are not grown. All we can do is find or discover them. They are actually created, managed, and controlled by the users themselves just through their practices of communication. Next slide, please. EduRSS. One of the things that I've been working on over the years is something called EduRSS, and this has changed over time to become software that I'm now working on called Grasshopper. And what the idea of EduRSS was to look at people, individual people, rather than organizations, who were creating weblogs on the subject of educational technology. And what I found over the years are hundreds of individual people creating a network of conversation through these weblogs. Now, today in the Web 2.0 environment, these conversations have, as predicted, become quite a bit more complex, where they're using not simply blogs, they're using Flickr, they're using YouTube, they're using social networks, they're using Twitter and the rest of it. But what is characterizing these conversations is that the creativity and the control is at the edges of these conversations, and more people are using the social networking sites and that simply as channels through which to send content, rather than destinations or shared repositories for their content. Next slide, please. And we move into the era of small pieces loosely joined, instead of the community of practice thought of as a large single entity. The community of practice is now many small little entities. I hope you see me poking things and creating little entities, loosely joined through conversation and community. Next slide, please. Over the last few years, we've seen the emergence of what may be called the personalized web. This is the interactive web, the web that is not simply a web where we go and look at things. It's not simply a web where we go and consume content. It's rather a place where we do things, where we interact, where we create, where we participate. Next slide, please. In this personalized web, we have many of the same sort of functions that existed in the original concept of the community of practice. Dana Boyd, for example, talks about the way the dynamics of identity production play out visibly in these social networks. People using these kind of systems are now creating themselves, creating their own personas, their own profiles, their own public-facing image of themselves, and in so doing are actually creating themselves internally, are actually growing and developing and learning internally. And here we see in a very clear way the linkage between the community of practice as it's beginning to evolve and the concept of the personal learning environment as it's beginning to evolve. Next slide. Sherry Turkle. What we are seeing in these networks, as we used to see in some of the older peer-to-peer systems where people engaged in conversations, is that there is an increasing tolerance, an increasing expectation that there will be a multiplicity of individuals rather than people beginning to be subsumed under some single shared identity. There's not the tendency that existed previously to attempt to rank or judge or expel that which is different from us, because in these networks of conversations, that which is different is also that which creates value. That which is different is what creates the possibility of communication occurring across the network. Next slide, please. In my own work, starting about 3 years ago and continuing from there, I've begun, therefore, to look at two major types of community, two major ways of organizing ourselves, which I distinguish between the concept of groups and the concept of networks. Now, I hasten to say that this is not unique to me. It's something that has been talked about for many years, but the groups and networks concept, I think, is fundamental to understanding the personal learning environment in the future. Groups require unity, while networks require diversity. Groups require coherence, while networks require autonomy. Groups require privacy or segregation, while networks require openness, etc. Groups are more like communities of practice as originally defined by Etienne Wenger, while networks are what the internet is beginning to turn our online community into. Now, unfortunately, I would like to be able to continue further on this, but we are running out of time in this presentation because we started somewhat late. But you have the remainder of the slides in front of you. The remainder of the slides discuss this concept. They elaborate on this concept. So the takeaway message that I want you to take from this presentation is that the conception of learning as happening inside some kind of group, the way we originally saw communities of practice, is something that because of the way the network functions, something that is shifting or changing from this single sort of cohesive entity to something where individuals have more power, more autonomy, and therefore interact in different, less managed, less governed ways. And I'll leave the talk on that note and turn it back over to the organizers and see if they would like to take questions or comments at this time. Oh, I see my slides are still flashing. use the chat room or come into the thingy here and tell me what you would like to do. Okay, from the looks of the chat messages, we're wrapping up this session here, so I'm going to be signing off. Thank you, everyone, and have yourselves a good afternoon and a good conference.